An Anonymous Story by Anton Chekhov. Chapter 1. Through causes which it is not the time to go into in detail, I had to enter the service of a Petersburg official called Orlov, in the capacity of a footman. He was about 35, and was called Georgi Ivanitch. I entered this Orlov service on account of his father, a prominent political man, whom I looked upon as a serious enemy of my cause. I reckoned that, living with the son, I should, from the conversations I should hear, and from the letters and papers I should find on the table, learn every detail of the father's plans and intentions. As a rule, at 11 o'clock in the morning, the electric bell rang in my footman's quarters to let me know that my master was awake. When I went into the bedroom with his polished shoes and brushed clothes, Georgi Ivanitch would be sitting in his bed with a face that looked not drowsy, but rather exhausted by sleep, and he would gaze off in one direction without any sign of satisfaction at having waked. I helped him to dress, and he let me do it with an air of reluctance, without speaking or noticing my presence. Then, with his head wet with washing, smelling of fresh scent, he used to go into the dining room to drink his coffee. He used to sit at the table, sipping his coffee and glancing through the newspapers, while the maid Polya and I stood respectfully at the door, gazing at him. Two grown-up persons had to stand watching with the gravest attention, a third drinking coffee and munching rusks. It was probably ludicrous and grotesque, but I saw nothing humiliating in having to stand near the door, though I was quite as well-born and well-educated as Orlov himself. I was in the first stage of consumption, and was suffering from something else, possibly even more serious than consumption. I don't know whether it was the effect of my illness or of an incipient change in my philosophy of life, of which I was not conscious at the time, but I was, day by day, more possessed by a passionate, irritating longing for ordinary everyday life. I yearned for mental tranquility, health, fresh air, good food. I was becoming a dreamer. And like a dreamer, I did not know exactly what I wanted. Sometimes I felt inclined to go into a monastery, to sit there for days together by the window and gaze at the trees in the fields. Sometimes I fancied I would buy 15 acres of land and settle down as a country gentleman. Sometimes I inwardly vowed to take up science and become a professor at some provincial university. I was a retired Navy lieutenant. I dreamed of the sea, of our squadron, and of the corvette in which I had made the cruise round the world. I longed to experience again the indescribable feeling when, walking in the tropical forest or looking at the sunset in the Bay of Bengal, one is thrilled with ecstasy and at the same time homesick. I dreamed of mountains, women, music, and with the curiosity of a child, I looked into people's faces, listened to their voices. And when I stood at the door and watched Orlov sipping his coffee, I felt not a footman, but a man interested in everything in the world, even in Orlov. In appearance, Orlov was a typical Petersburger, with narrow shoulders, a long waist, sunken temples, eyes of an indefinite color, and scanty, dingy-colored hair, beard, and mustaches. His face had a stale, unpleasant look, though it was studiously cared for. It was particularly unpleasant when he was asleep or lost in thought. It is not worthwhile describing a quite ordinary appearance. Besides, Petersburg is not Spain, and a man's appearance is not of much consequence even in love affairs, and is only of value to a handsome footman or coachman. I have spoken of Orlov's face and hair only because there was something in his appearance worth mentioning. When Orlov took a newspaper or book, whatever it might be, or met people, whoever they be, an ironical smile began to come into his eyes, and his whole countenance assumed an expression of light mockery in which there was no malice. Before reading or hearing anything, he always had his irony in readiness, as a savage has his shield. It was an habitual irony, like some old liquor brewed years ago, and now it came into his face probably without any participation of his will, as it were by reflex action. But of that later. Soon after midday, he took his portfolio full of papers and drove to his office. He dined away from home and returned after 8 o'clock. I used to light the lamp and...